And we're live. Welcome. My name is Jacqueline Leeds. I'm the Director of Communications at Animal Defense Partnership. And Animal Defense Partnership provides free legal counsel to now over 175 nonprofits that advocate for animals and or plant-based diet change, including, lucky for us, legal impact for chickens. And today we get to talk with Elena Nello, who is the founder and president of Legal Impact for Chickens. She received her undergraduate and law degrees from Harvard. She's clerked for a federal judge, worked at PETA, Animal Legal Defense Fund, and the Good Food Institute before starting Legal Impact for Chickens. And you'll hear more about why Aline is so amazing. But I am just so admire that she could have walked into really a career path that she had earned that would have been easy. And instead, she is taking her brilliance and her passion and using that to make a change for better for animals. Mm-hmm. So with that, I will invite you, if you are listening via Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, to ask your questions in real time in the comments so that I can pass those along to Aline. And we'll get started. Can you tell us a little bit more about your initial introduction to the beauty and sentience and intelligence of birds?
Yes. But first, I just wanted to thank you so much for having me, Jacqueline, and thank you to Animal Defense Partnership for all the free legal help that you've provided already to Legal Impact for Chickens. But yes, I'll answer your question about how I first became aware of how amazing and sentient and intelligent birds are. So when I was 11 years old, my parents bought me a present, and the present was a little bird named Conrad. He was a cockatiel. And at first I thought a bird would be kind of like an object, like just this strange feathery thing that I couldn't really understand. But then once I got to know Conrad, I found out that he had feelings and opinions, and he would get upset about things and like scream at the top of his lungs when he was upset. And if he was happy, he might like close his eyes and put his head down and let me pet him. And he would, like have words that he kind of made up. Like if he ever saw water and he wanted a sip, he would go f-f-f-f-f. And then I like learned that like that's his way of saying, give me some water. He was like, he had things he liked and didn't like he hated being alone and he loved being with people. And he loved the pencil sharpener, like the sound that it made, and he would imitate it. So I got to know Conrad, and that just like changed my whole life.
I can empathize, because as I was just sharing with you, I also share my life with a little Quaker parrot named Houdini, who has full personality, just as much personality as my dog and cat. For people who haven't had the privilege of spending time with birds, especially chickens, could you share a couple cool things about chickens that people might not know?
So they're very awesome. I guess one cool thing I learned about chickens is that mother hens will talk to their babies when the babies are still in the egg before they hatch. And then by the time the bird hatches, the bird will recognize their mom's voice and differentiate their mom from other chickens. And it's also really cool. So yeah, I feel like mother hens are notoriously kind and loving. And that's just like a cool example of how kind they are and also how smart the babies are that the babies can remember. And I've also been really impressed by how kind roosters can be. So a lot of roosters, that's the word for male chickens, will care for the flock and they'll like think of, it seems like they see the well-being of the hens as their job. And so the way that I learned this was once I visited a farm sanctuary and the tour guide gave everybody grapes that were cut up and said, these grapes are for the hens, but you're not allowed to approach the hens because the rooster would be too protective and he will like, he'll think that you're a threat. So you have to give the grapes to the rooster and then just watch and see what he does. And so we would give each grape to the rooster one at a time because he could only hold one in his beak. And then he would go and distribute the grapes to a hen. So each hen would get a grape. And he made sure all of them got a grape before he ate a grape himself. So I guess just like chickens can be very kind and they can have responsibilities and care about their responsibilities. I find that really cool and impressive. And I was also really interested to learn that chickens sometimes love to sit in trees. Usually, most people think of chickens being an environment where they can't get into a tree. But if there are trees with low boughs, the chickens apparently love to sit there.
That's super cool. I love that they can recognize their mom's voice from, I was going to say in utero, that's not quite right, but from in egg. That's really sweet. Thank you for sharing that. Why law school as a path to help?
So I have like sort of a good reason and a bad reason. I think that probably a big part of the reason, which is not, it might not be a good reason, or maybe it is, I don't know, but it's not a very socially acceptable reason. It's just that my dad and my sister and my brother were all lawyers. And so it was just a very natural thing for me. Like, it was something my family definitely had in mind that I could do, and something that was always in the forefront of my mind, like maybe I should go to law school. Although I resisted for a while at first because I really wanted to do animal rights. And at first I didn't see how to do animal rights as a lawyer. But then the good reason, I guess, is that I did eventually figure out how to do animal rights as a lawyer. And that's what made me want to go to law school. So before law school, I was working at PETA, and the lawyers at PETA were like super impressive. They still are super impressive. They were just constantly winning things. Like it felt like once a week, we would all get an email from Ingrid, the head of PETA, saying like, it's a celebration. The lawyers won this case or this thing, and we're all gonna go downstairs and have cake and champagne, and like some animal is gonna be better off because of it. And so that was really, really cool and made me think like, oh, like I could be a lawyer and then work at an animal rights group and save animals. So yeah, that's kind of what got me to want to go ahead with being a lawyer. So I guess it's not so much that I didn't decide to be a lawyer originally. Well, it wasn't like I was looking for a way to help animals and thought that being a lawyer would be the best way. It's more like I knew I was going to help animals no matter what. And I thought it would be cool to be a lawyer, but at first I thought that would be something that would take me away from helping animals. And then when I realized I could still help animals as a lawyer, I was like, okay, it's a good idea.
Those are all good reasons to go to law school, knowing that you're going to help animals anyway. I don't think there's such a thing as a bad reason. Why, after working at a couple other cool organizations, tell me about your thought process in starting your own organization.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I worked at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, among other organizations. That's the most relevant because I was doing animal litigation there, and I saw that you also worked there. And so from my time at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, I like found that I loved litigating, and I just found like litigating is the coolest thing ever, in my opinion. It's basically like you get to, if you're a plaintiff's lawyer, you get to collect a bunch of evidence to try to prove that somebody's doing something wrong. So you kind of feel like a detective. And then you get to write up a bunch of like arguments. And I love arguing with people. And the fact that I'm not getting in trouble for arguing, it's my job to argue, is super cool. So like every single part of litigation was super fun and cool to me. Also, it's very varied. It's not just like, at least at a place like the Animal Legal Defense Fund, it's very varied. You get to do a bit of everything. I know that at a big law firm, litigation could be like more of an assembly line where each person has one part of it. But at a nonprofit, usually you get to do a lot of things. So I loved litigation. But the only thing that I guess I would still be dissatisfied in my job, even though I had almost everything I wanted, like I was helping animals, I was doing a really fun thing, but I would keep having like very specific visions for how I wanted to do things. And sometimes the vision I would have is like not something I could really implement in my role at a larger organization. And so that's why I started my own nonprofit, basically, because I wanted to like kind of, I wanted to try out this experiment with this hypothesis, I guess I had, that there could be an organization like Legal Impact for Chickens and see. So one of the things I was really interested in is, effective altruism and the idea of doing the greatest good for the greatest number. So the viewers may know there's this movement called effective altruism where people are focusing on how to help the largest number of sentient beings at once. And a lot of animal advocates are involved in the movement, but then a lot of others are not involved in it. And there's a lot of disagreement about whether the movement is right or wrong. And so I was thinking that there should be a version of animal litigation that's like effective altruism. So basically like using those principles to figure out what lawsuits we should bring. Specifically effective altruism, because it's all about numbers. In my mind, if you were to apply that to litigation, you would be thinking we should bring a lawsuit where if we win, we could help like millions or billions of animals. And basically do like a mathematical calculation to figure out if it's a good lawsuit to bring, which is something that, as far as I was aware at the time, I guess as far as I'm aware now, I don't think, I don't know if there's any other group doing something like that. I'm thinking there could be, it's possible that there is another group doing things like that, but that I'm not sure. And so it wasn't the kind of thing that any other current group was going to start doing, because it's like an ideology and different groups disagree and they have a reason for not wanting to do it that way. It's not something where you could just say, hey, we should do math to figure out what lawsuits to bring and everyone would be on board. Because I kind of tried that and not everyone's on board with that for good reasons. I just wanted to like try doing it this other way, and that's legal impact for chickens.
That's such a fascinating approach. I was going to ask you about how you strategize over which lawsuits to bring, and how fascinating that you literally calculate the potential impact. What a great approach. I'm glad that you started something so that you are able to implement that. Speaking of lawsuits with potentially great impact, can you tell us more about the Costco lawsuit?
Yes. So Legal Impact for Chickens is representing two Costco shareholders who are suing Costco's executives for violation of the duty to act lawfully. So let me just break that down into its pieces. Every corporation has a board and generally has executives. Corporations generally have board members and also officers, which are things like the CEO. And they are, I'm going to summarize by just calling all those people executives. So they're people who like run the corporation. And executives owe fiduciary duties to their corporation. So these are things that if you're an executive of a corporation, you have to do these things. If you don't do them, the corporation can sue you. And the most commonly discussed fiduciary duties are the duty of care and the duty of loyalty. So the duty of care basically says like, be careful when you're running a corporation. Don't just like make, you know, get really drunk and make all your decisions while drunk and waste the corporation's money because you don't know what you're doing. That would be breaching your duty that you as an executive owe to your corporation. And then the duty of loyalty says put the corporation first rather than putting yourself first. So even if you're totally sober and you're very intentionally calculating a plan to steal money from the corporation, you'd be violating your duty of loyalty because you have to make sure that the corporation keeps its money and you don't steal the money and you don't steal opportunities or in any way try to advance yourself at the expense of the corporation. So those are the most commonly known fiduciary duties, but there's also other fiduciary duties that executives owe to their corporation. And one that is not discussed very often is the duty to act lawfully. So this is basically the idea that corporations, they're these legal fictions, these entities created by law, and the number one thing they want above anything else is to follow the law. They might want to make money, but first they want to follow the law. And so if an executive of a corporation comes up with some great scheme to make money, but the way they're going to make money is by committing a crime, they're actually hurting the corporation with that scheme. And the corporation could actually turn around and sue them. So yeah, that's what I mean when I say our shareholders are suing Costco executives for violations of the fiduciary duty to act lawfully. The illegal behavior that's happening is illegal neglect of chickens on factory farms in Nebraska and Iowa. So most people would think of Costco as like a store that's like a retailer, or actually ironically the name is wholesale, but a place where you go to buy things. And that's what Costco is, but Costco is also a chicken meat producer. So rather than always having to rely on buying meat from Tyson, Cargill, and other meat producers, Costco now raises birds and slaughters the birds. And so
as of 2019?
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't realize that actually until I read some of the coverage of the lawsuit. I had no idea that they branched out from wholesale and retail. Sorry, continue. Yes,
a lot of people don't know. And a lot of Costco's shareholders are actually like vegans or people who are very passionate about animal protection and like wouldn't at all want Costco to be doing or don't want Costco to be doing the kind of things it's doing to chickens. So last year, Mercy for Animals did an undercover investigation into how Costco is raising its birds and found that there's widespread mistreatment. And specifically, Mercy for Animals found that a lot of the birds are bred to grow so big so fast that they can't even stand up under their own weight. And a bird who can't stand up can't get to food or water because the way that they're fed is in these troughs in certain locations in the factory farm. And so my understanding is that those birds would just slowly die while they're unable to reach food or water. And that is a violation of Nebraska and Iowa's law against animal neglect because those states have laws saying that animals need to be given food, water, and necessary care or something along, I don't know if that's a direct quote, but something like that. So that's why Costco has a cause of action against its executives for violating the duty to act lawfully. And the last part that a viewer may be wondering is, how is it that Legal Impact for Chickens came to be representing Costco? So the answer is that we're representing two shareholders who are stepping into the shoes of Costco to bring this lawsuit. There's this really cool doctrine called shareholder derivative, which says that if you own even a single share in a company and you feel that the company is being harmed, in certain circumstances, you have the right to bring a lawsuit on that company's behalf. This is most useful when the people allegedly harming the company are the executives, because normally they would bring the lawsuit, but if they're the ones doing the bad thing, they're not going to want to bring a lawsuit. So I hope that explains everything. Sorry that was so long.
No, that was, thank you for breaking down the different legal elements of what the suit is. How did you find these particular two shareholders?
So I can't go too much into the details of my relationship with them because of privilege and stuff, but they're both people that have owned shares in Costco for a while and care a lot about the treatment of animals and were really horrified to see the Mercy for Animals undercover investigation. And both of them are trying to protect Costco and help Costco by making sure that it follows the law.
What would a victory in this lawsuit look like? I think a lot of people think of lawsuits and winning being money or something very concrete. And so what's the desired outcome where Costco shareholders are the plaintiff, both in terms of what a legal victory looks like, but then also the broader implications for, of course, the chickens involved?
Yeah, so our goal is for Costco to follow the law and to make sure that every single one of its chickens have access to food and water and individualized veterinary care. So a victory for us would be a ruling telling Costco that, or telling Costco's executives that they need to make sure that happens, or a settlement where Costco's executives say, okay, we understand, we will make sure to be complying with the neglect law in Nebraska and Iowa. And Costco is responsible for the lives and deaths of 100 million chickens every year. So that kind of win would do a huge amount of good for a huge number of animals.
I see the math part. It's 9 billion chickens a year, is that right? In total?
In the U.S.?
In the food system?
Yes, that sounds right to me.
Yes, that's
I haven't checked recently, but that's what I heard last time I checked.
So chickens in and of themselves seem like a mathematically good approach to helping the most sentient.
Yes. You're totally seeing the vision. A lot of people ask, why are we called Legal Impact for Chickens? And that's exactly what you just said. It's that there are so many chickens that are treated so badly in the U.S. and we think that we could help them. And so we think that would be the best way that we could affect the largest number of animals.
That's in terms of victory in the lawsuit. So this lawsuit recently got coverage in Washington Post, which is really incredible. I'm wondering, is the vision for victory twofold in that one, it's you know, the legal victory and that implications, but then two, sort of the publicity that you can drive around the lawsuit and increased awareness or public pressure that could come from publicity around the suit, regardless of the legal outcome of the lawsuit?
I think that the legal victory is like the most important thing. Like maybe it's 99% of what we care about or 99.9%. So I think that press is definitely like kind of an afterthought. And in fact, I was so happy with the how much press we got. We had amazing volunteers that helped us. And if you're listening and you're one of them, you know who you are. I don't know if they want me to say their names, so I'm not going to, but and we also had an amazing intern. I definitely can't say her name, Victoria Choi, that helped with the press. So that was really, really amazing, but it wasn't really like our goal. We were sort of just like, if we're doing a lawsuit, we ought to do press on it because then people will know what we're doing. And then we could like fundraise to do more lawsuits. So it wasn't, I guess it wasn't that big of a part of a strategy. And I was really surprised at how well the press did. We never envisioned it would do that well. I was thinking maybe we'll get some hits in like Meeting Place, M-E-A-T-I-N-G-P-L-A-C-E, that's the meat industry publication. And maybe we would get hits in like local Nebraska news, which we did get both, but I didn't expect any of the mainstream news. So I guess I can't really say that it was like part of our strategy. It's sort of just like, I think it was luck that it happened. But I do think press is important because I want other companies to see it. Like, I want everyone to follow the law. That's much better. It's much better if people just follow the law rather than us have to sue them. So my hope is that companies will see this and then they might, you know, want to double check and make sure that they're following all the laws.
Do you think that, so there are a couple huge things going on right now globally that definitely have an impact on chickens and chickens on us the way that it's happening. So both the huge avian flu that's sweeping the US and the globe, and then also of course the pandemic, which we know that pandemics arise from animals. Do you think that the presence of those two huge things that ultimately have effect on producers and consumers and human health, in addition to of course the animals and the welfare of the animals involved, that will positively or negatively or at all influence the kinds of lawsuits that you can bring or the potential receptiveness of those suits, since it's, you know, in the context of a much larger problem?
That's a good point. I don't know. I feel like both of those things are huge tragedies, so it's hard to feel positive about either one. Like, so many birds have suffered and died because of bird flu. But I do hope that one thing I have been hoping a lot is for people to connect the two, like the pandemic and bird flu, because I think a lot of the things that we all learned about human illnesses are also true for chicken illnesses. And I just keep hoping people will make a connection, although I don't know if they will. But as we've all learned, the best way to prevent getting sick from COVID is to social distance and try not to stay inside with other humans for too long. And if you are inside, try to have the windows open. And also like take care of yourself, get plenty of rest, be healthy in other ways. And none of that happens on factory farms for chickens. It's like this indoor building with no windows usually, where hundreds of thousands of birds, all very similar genetics, are like crammed and really, really close to each other. And they're all stressed and like not feeling very well. So in my mind, it seems very unsurprising that there would be a bird flu pandemic, given what we know about how COVID spreads. If you just make an analogy, like imagine if people were all doing what birds are doing, wouldn't we think COVID would spread like crazy, you know? So what I've been hoping is just that people will start to realize like the way to prevent bird flu is to let birds have more space from each other, which unfortunately, I don't know if that's really been the reaction. I feel like if anything, the reaction has been to like keep them more inside. Yeah, I don't know if that really answered your question, sorry.
No, it did. It seems both relevant and irrelevant for the work that you're doing. And the piece that's irrelevant is sort of unfortunate that people don't connect the dots more often. Because I would think even, you know, companies like Costco, it's not even financially advantageous to have to cull massive amounts of chickens because flu is spreading. So I would hope and think that maybe that would also pressure companies to keep the welfare of chickens at least as a factor.
Yeah, I really hope so. And you just touched on something which is like, I think a message that I really want to get out to the world, which is that it's not a zero-sum game helping animals and making profit. There are some times when the things align. They don't always align. Anyone who tells you like companies have to treat animals well or else they wouldn't make money, like that's a lie. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there are certain things like bird flu that are bad for animals and bad for profit. And so I do wish that, I would hope that going forward, companies that raise animals will be more receptive to the idea that like, you should be open to animal welfare things because sometimes they're also going to be good for you financially. And I would also hope that animal welfare people might take like a friendlier approach to farmers, knowing that, you know, you don't have to just treat them as the enemy because there could be some kind of a win-win where something could be better for everybody. Like ending bird flu would be better for everybody, in my opinion.
Agreed. Well, I think we'd all probably agree on that. Everybody, farmers included.
Yeah.
The approach to do that, maybe disagreement, but
yeah.
A shared goal. What, taking this sort of down from the philosophic and legal level to sort of the day-to-day operations of running your own essentially nonprofit law firm, what's been the hardest part about starting a law practice of this nature?
Everything has been so hard. I saw that you, Jacqueline, you were an executive director at two different nonprofits before.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the hardest part is the nonprofit running part, like just running a business or a nonprofit. Yeah, it's not the part about the law. I guess that all, at least it's somewhat similar to what I was doing at the Animal Legal Defense Fund. So that part I am less stressed about. The most stressful part is like, how do we hire and grow the organization? By the way, shout out, we're hiring. If anyone thinks this seems cool, go to legalimpactforchickens.org. Yeah, how do we grow the organization? How do I make sure that I'm going to be a good supervisor? Like, what should my relationship with the board be? How do I make donors feel seen? Like, how do I make sure I comply with all the filings that the government requires? And also just feeling like, what am I doing? What if this is a terrible idea and I don't know what I'm doing? I guess like the self-confidence issue of constantly questioning myself. So yeah, I would say everything that's hard is all the not law parts of it. Oh, like figuring out like accounting, the computer systems, like all the things that probably you also had to do as ED that I don't know how to do and no one trained me to do. I'm kind of just trying to figure it out. That's very stressful.
Yes, running any organization is definitely a do all the things job, particularly when it's a small, where you know, starting an organization. I definitely appreciate the challenge in that, for sure. How can people help support Legal Impact for Chickens?
So there's multiple ways you can support us. If you have money, we're always collecting donations. You can go to legalimpactforchickens.org/donate, and you know, a small amount of money can go a really long way towards improving animals' lives. As I mentioned, one lawsuit is aiming to help 100 million animals. And so if you can help us a little bit, it will be a lot to the birds we're helping. But we also need like volunteers. If you're a lawyer, well, if you're a lawyer, first of all, you should apply to work with us. But if you're a lawyer and you don't want to work with us, we need volunteers. And we also use contract attorneys. So if you are a lawyer and you can't afford to volunteer, we might be able to pay you depending on what the situation is on a contract basis. And then if you're a veterinarian, we also always need help from expert witnesses, or if you have any experience with farming or contract growing, we really, really want to hear from you. So please reach out. And then lastly, like, I would just really appreciate if anyone would follow us on social media, share our social media things. Like, that doesn't cost any money and you don't need any special expertise, but it could help get the word out to somebody else that might be able to volunteer or work or donate or whatever. So yeah, that's the answer.
And since I think that a lot of lawyers will likely tune into this, you contract attorneys, are you looking for contract attorneys from any particular state or every state or any state?
Yes. Good thing you mentioned about states. Every state, yes. We currently are, Legal Impact for Chickens is based in California, but we're litigating all over, we plan to litigate all over the country. And whenever we do that, we need a local counsel in the state that we're litigating in. So right now we are bringing our lawsuit in Washington State and we have an amazing local counsel, Adam Karp. But if anyone, even just reaching out and saying you're up for helping or doing contract work or doing pro bono work and telling me what state you're in could be really helpful. I might not reach out to you for like a year or two, but then when we are planning a lawsuit in a certain state, if I could say, oh, we know somebody in the state, that is really, really, really huge. So when you mentioned states, I was like, yes, any state, whatever state you're in, I just want to know so I can have it in my list of who to reach out to so that when the time comes, it's not a panic. And then sometimes we need help with like just all sorts of things that you could probably do from anywhere. Like if we're bringing a lawsuit, like right now we're bringing this lawsuit and it's more work than I can do myself. And so I have a contract attorney who helps and it doesn't, I'm just sort of like giving him the concrete tasks. I think it's probably the kind of thing somebody could do from anywhere. We would have to look into like the ethics rules, but I think because you'd be working with me and I'm a lawyer too, I think somebody could help from anywhere.
And people can contact you via the Legal Impact for Chickens website, right?
Yes. My email is Alene, A-L-E-N-E, at legalimpactforchickens.org. But it's so long, it's easier to just go to the website and you'll find like a info at legalimpactforchickens.org. That also goes to me. So, yeah.
And we can share your contact information as well.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Well, Alene, thank you so much for what you are doing and for taking time to share this with us and with everyone watching. It's such a privilege to get to learn more about your strategy and its impact. I think that's really inspiring. So thank you.
Thank you so much for interviewing me, Jacqueline. And thank you to everything that Animal Defense Partnership does. And thank you to all the viewers for caring about chickens.
Thank you.